What I don't understand is why has someone not thought of this before? This is such a genius idea that Christy and her team have come up with at the Ease team. And if you're not aware of what this little device is, it's an acupressure device that you can use to help move things along. It helps with bloating, constipation, even with menstrual cramps. And it blows my mind that nobody has thought of this yet because there's such a need.
It's shocking. And the idea of using acupressure points on the body is not brand new. But what Christy and her team have done is they've really actually consolidated that information, created a tool that fits in the palm of your hand that you can put very conveniently in the bathroom or anywhere in your house and use it. What does it take? 1 to 3 minutes of using this device
in
certain pressure points. Mm-hmm. And it really does. I'll tell you guys, when we were interviewing Christy, I was using the device as a demonstration to show people. And by the time we were done, I was like, guys, we got to wrap this up because it is time to go.
I got to go.
You guys can learn more about the science behind this, what the device looks like, and purchase it at gowithease.com/curiouswomen. And if you use the code CuriousWomen, you'll get 10% off your order.
Oh my God. I cannot believe I am fangirling out. And I was before we did this episode, and I still am.
We say this about a lot of our guests, and but I told her, I said, this is one interview that I was really looking forward to. So Ayla, we have Ayla Barmer with us today. She's an integrative and functional dietitian, but somehow feels like she's just on another level.
Oh,
like,
my God.
On another level.
And the goat, if you will.
The goat. Exactly. Exactly. And we really dialed in on preconception needs, fertility needs from both men and women. We talked a little bit about food. We talked a little bit about lifestyle. And we talked a lot about supplementation.
Yes.
Because what is the first thing when you get pregnant that everybody says? Are you on a prenatal?
Pop and that prenatal, baby.
Pop your prenatal. It's not bad advice. But Meg, you and I know enough about the industry to know that the average woman who's having a baby does not know all of the information that's essential to know when you're choosing a really good multivitamin, mm-hmm. a really good prenatal vitamin. Mm-hmm. And so people are getting taken advantage of left and right simply because they don't know any better. And this conversation, you know, I felt, Meg, what do you think? I think she gave a really boiled down, mm-hmm. approachable, tangible thing. Like, here's all of the information and here's how you can think about it without being overwhelmed and feeling like you're going to fail.
Oh, yeah. Little golden nuggets of information is how I think about it. And I love what you said before we started recording. You said she's no nonsense, but she does it with a hug. And that is,
yes.
I mean, that's so it. And she also, you said something else too, that just like really rings true for me. She almost has this air of like carrying around this ancient wisdom, but she also does a great job of supporting that with science. I would believe anything she said with or without the science.
She's like the healer of the clan.
Yeah. Right?
That's how I feel.
Exactly.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
And it was terrific to just kind of have some of that, you know, nourishment around this topic, which is, you know, it's a vulnerable period of time in a woman's life. It's a vulnerable period of time for the baby that's growing. And then also to have such wisdom for partners and for men around the ways in which they can contribute and be really helpful. I think that there are actually quite a few men who feel a little helpless in this process.
I agree.
Where it's like, you know, I can't do anything except the fun part,
but
right?
You can.
Getting her pregnant. Right. But there was so much that we learned about today for like 3, 6 plus months. Where you do play an important role and you can really kind of take that and, you know, step into that sort of empowerment as part of the process with your partner in making a baby. So I thought the conversation was even better than I could have possibly imagined. You know,
me
for
too.
Somebody who is so brilliant in their field, mm-hmm. It's strange to also get that sense of warmth and feeling and humanity from people.
Oh, what, like a stick of warm melted butter is how it felt.
Hey, love, here's to you, my dear friend.
Yes, before we jump into the episode, we really love this this little fun contest that we started with Christina on our last episode, the founder of Keg. So we also have a question for you after this episode. Again, we don't give the answer in this episode, but as a hint, look on Ayla's social media, look on her website, look on her things, and you may find the answer. But what you're going to do is you're going to answer this question, tag us on social media, and also tag Full Well Supplements.
Fertility. Right? Full Well Fertility.
Full Well Fertility. Tag that. Use that tag and Curious Women Podcast on Instagram or wherever you are posting and answer this question. What does research show is the minimum amount of vitamin D needed to reach the requirements for pregnant women?
What we're going to do is when you answer that question, you're going to tag Curious Women Podcast, you're going to tag Full Well Fertility, and Ayla is going to choose a winner, and you are going to receive her entire line. So you're going to get a prenatal, a fish oil, and she's got, we didn't even talk about this, it's called Nourished Nerves to help combat a lot of the complications of stress with people in this period of time. So, I mean, this is no joke. I know. Both of these prizes, they're all so fantastic. So, Ayla, in fact, told us that the answer to this question is on the home page of her website. So, if you visit fullwellfertility.com, you'll be able to find the answer to this question here. Again, we're looking for what does research tell us is the minimum amount of vitamin D necessary for pregnant women? Mm-hmm. And without further ado, we've got Ayla.
Woo!
So we have Ayla with us. And actually, Ayla, why don't you – I think I love the words that you have to put to this because you wear a lot of hats. You wear a lot of hats. So go ahead and show us your closet. What is it that you
– Okay, sure. So I'm a registered dietitian. I think of that as my foundation. You know, that's my conventional training. But in addition to that, I have training in integrative and functional medicine, women's health, infertility, herbalism. And so over the past 15 or so years, I've had a private practice in one form or another, Boston Functional Nutrition. It's been under other names. It evolves, you know, into a multi-clinician private practice and went from being a very general practice to specializing in infertility and women's health. And so most of my career has been spent in the clinical world, one-on-one work and counseling, group education, in the research, you know, teaching, pulling together literature reviews. I mean, that's like where I've spent a lot of my time. So I think of myself as a kind of a health practitioner first, really, turned now CPG company owner. So so now I founded and am now the CEO of Full Well, which really was developed out of a need that I saw in my practice. It started with me just getting frustrated with the formulas that were available, you know, wanting a specifically around prenatal multivitamins. So a prenatal multi was probably the number one, you know, dietary supplement that I was using with my practice clients, you know, with the stage of life that I was really working with. And so I needed something really good. So, you know, it was either that I couldn't really find exactly the formula I'd want. Like there'd be some that were close, but I'd want to make tweaks to them. But also I really wanted to get behind the curtain, you know, of how these dietary supplements were made, have full control over the manufacturing process, and most importantly, the testing that was done to ensure that what's in those capsules meets the label claim, you know, that it's safe, that we know it doesn't have the harmful contaminants in it. And I just really set out with the intention to create enough to really use with my practice clients to get better results and feel really good about what I was using in practice. But soon after I launched it, you know, I realized that I had colleagues that would also appreciate that, that a registered dietitian was behind the formula, that we were transparent from the get-go about what was in it and sharing test results. And so it's just really grown organically since then. And so that's where I'm spending the majority of my time now, is running Full Well, mostly because I just, it's providing an opportunity to not only do what I really want with formulas, you know, produce quality evidence-based formulas and in an ethical way, but it's giving me an opportunity to do the type of teaching and education that I love. And so that's a big mm-hmm. part of the brand as well. So we, Full Well offers fertility wellness products, but also education through our platforms. Yeah.
So what we really want to pick your brain about today is fertility. And I think we kind of want to have two camps of this conversation. We want to know, what is it that people need to be doing leading up to trying to conceive? And then knowing that part of that is going to be supplementation and a prenatal, what do we need to know around making a good decision for that? Because this is, it's such a unique period of time for people. And although Meg and I don't have any children, maybe you can speak to this. I imagine it is a very vulnerable feeling period of time, mm-hmm. and everybody's telling you what you should do, what you shouldn't do, how to do it, blah, blah, blah. And I think like we can kind of pull the emotion out of this conversation a little bit and just kind of say, here's what the research mm-hmm. shows us, and here's what you see with real human beings in your practice. And kind of pass along those words of wisdom in this conversation. So do you want to start? Let's start with the supplement piece. So obviously your drive here to create Full Well and the prenatal specifically in that line came from not finding what you wanted already being available. So go through, if you could, what are some of the most common things that you might find in the the CVS mm-hmm. brand, I'll just say, you know, not to call you out CVS, but you know what I mean? Very common, easily accessible, buy one, get one, you know, these kinds of things that people will often be like, oh, that makes mm-hmm. perfect sense. I'll choose that. What's the problem that you see in those that is really putting women in a position where they're being taken advantage of, thinking they're doing something really good, but really maybe that's not the
case? Yeah. Oh gosh, there's so much to say about that. And I'm sure you have seen a lot of what I'll talk about. And I mean, first, like I'm sure both of you, you know, I absolutely as a dietitian think food comes first, right? But we live in modern environments with a lot of additional stressors on our body. And this phase of life, you know, from preconception through, you know, breastfeeding is really nutrient intensive. I mean, as you can imagine, I think it's intuitive for a lot of people that we need a lot of nourishment to grow another human. And it's true. And I think now at this point, perhaps this point in time, we need it more so than other because than any other time because of how much burden is just placed on us between just stressors in our environment, mental, physical, all of the above, right? So now when it comes to a prenatal, there's a lot of really common things that are done to the most popular formulas. So I think that one place to start would be the addition of iron. And that's really common. It's almost a given that you're going to see iron in a prenatal. And the problem that I see with that is for a couple of reasons. So number one, not everybody will need to supplement with iron, you know, in for fertility through pregnancy or postpartum. Now, iron deficiency, iron needs go up, and it does become much more likely that you will become iron deficient with those needs going up and the resources being taken during pregnancy. But not everyone will need it. And iron's one of those things that there's a delicate balance. You know, you want to find the sweet spot mm-hmm. and you don't want to take it if you don't need it, because there's some consequences to that. I mean, in my opinion, and I think this is really backed by the evidence, you know, it can be inflammatory. It can disrupt digestion. It can be really hard to tolerate. You know, it can kind of disrupt gut microbiota. There's an impact to too much iron. The other issue is that iron really competes for absorption of other really important nutrients. You know, calcium and iron are two that notoriously really compete with each other, right, for absorption. And so when they're together, you're kind of like negating a lot of the nutrients there. So I also think that, you know, iron needs are assessed, really not fully assessed, I should say, or accurately assessed by most practitioners. The standard in many like OB appointments, midwife appointments, you know, is to just run a hemoglobin hematocrit. And I would never diss those providers. It's more, that is more driven by the health insurance model, what's covered, you know, that sort of thing. So there's a reason why really comprehensive panels are not run. You know, it takes, what is it, 15, 18 years for research to kind of catch up to, you know, practice and to
something
see it there.
Crazy
yeah.
Like that. Yeah.
So, you know, it's really not the fault of the providers. It's kind of a systems issue, but, you know, it is important to know that you cannot really fully assess iron status from just a hemoglobin hematocrit, which is a basic CBC panel, basically, that you're going to get. And so I think there's a couple of things I'm adding a lot here to this. This is just one nutrient.
Exactly. What I wanted. Yes. Yeah. This is important because here's the thing. I'm going to interrupt you real quick. When you say one thing, it unravels 40 mm-hmm. other things for mm-hmm. people, not just us. There's a reason that you naturally kind of go into all of this because it's the questions that are coming up. As soon as you say, oh, perhaps you shouldn't have iron in your prenatal, then you think, well, how do I know if I need mm-hmm. it? What if I need it later on? Da, da, da. And that's what you're hitting on. So this is going to continue to happen, guys, as you are listening. Please be aware, you've been warned. Like, we don't know how to do it.
Yeah, and
way.
I'm going to trust Kylie and Meg to just, like, give me the hook. Interjective. So with iron, I mean, it's this multi-factor problem, right? So I think the big takeaway is I generally don't recommend just taking a prenatal that has iron thrown in it. It's not only that you may not need it, it may not be at the right amounts, and it also may not be in a bioavailable, easy to tolerate form. And so you're causing yourself unnecessary stress and discomfort when in a time that you don't want any extra, you know, straws on the camel's back, so to speak.
I have a question really fast because this reminds me of the recommendation I've heard from a lot of my friends who were, when they were going through the process of trying to conceive, that the general recommendation, or actually I have a friend who's not even actively trying, but just because she's of age and it, air quote, might happen, the doctor wants her on a prenatal. And I'm sure he or she didn't recommend with or without iron. So I'm just curious about your thoughts on that. What's your recommendation for those who are kind of in that middle ground?
Yeah, I think, you know, that recommendation kind of causes women to bristle, and rightfully so in a way, you know, this sort of, if you're of childbearing age, you should take a prenatal. And I've heard it so much, and it's kind of like, gosh, like stay out of my life and my body. But
yeah,
some of the reasoning, you know, too. Some of the reasoning behind that is not, it just needs to, I think it needs to be explained, right? You know, I do agree with that in that, quite a bit of the nutrient needs, and actually let me back up. I would say, building your nutrient stores and going into pregnancy replete, you know, with good nutrient status is smart, and it will lead you to success, and it will reduce the risk of pregnancy complications and help the pregnancy go smoother. It may even help reduce some of that pregnancy nausea and discomfort. There's a lot of advantages, but you know, one of the big reasons is that some of the most important nutrients that you're going to get in supplement form and maybe not enough of in diet are really critical before you may even know you're pregnant. So folate, mm-hmm. choline, B12, there's kind of like a trifecta there, those ones, B6 too. Those are really important for very early embryo development and implantation. And so, and neural tube development. So the neural tube, we hear about neural tube defects, and it's really why. And we could talk about folate, back to your question, Kylie, too, and prenatals and what to look for. But it's really why the food supply started to be fortified, right, in the late 90s with folic acid, mm-hmm. which is problematic. But really with the intention to help reduce neural tube defects, because folate is so important for that. But choline is as well, and so is B12. And you don't know, so the neural tube the neural tube actually closes around week 5 of pregnancy. And for those listening that don't know, that's actually only 2-3 weeks after a missed period for most women. So it's actually some with the timing, right? You back up your weeks to the first day of your last period. So really most people don't even know they're pregnant at that point.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Okay. So let me go back. I have so many questions that came out off of that, but let's circle back to the iron component and the way that getting iron tested is a systems issue. So what is, if somebody is in a position where they have the ability mm-hmm. and feel comfortable requesting something slightly different, what might they request in order to really understand in terms of iron, how they could move forward the best?
Yeah, so we did a really comprehensive blog post on exactly walking you through like what to ask your provider for at fullwellfertility.com. Oh. And I'm proud of that post because I feel like you can take that with you to your practitioner. Awesome. But I'd say at a minimum, you want to get at least a ferritin as well. And then the interpretation needs to be looked at as trimester specific lab ranges, reference ranges. And that's simply not being done. And a good source for that, and this is not exclusive to health practitioners, I believe the general public can access this, is perinatology.com has a pretty good trimester specific lab reference range chart for various things. And I think that's a really good resource, you know, to at least, you know, open up the conversation with your provider. It's like, do I really need supplemental iron? Can I do this through diet? Should you talk to a dietitian, right? I mean, we know OBs, nurse practitioners, midwives have varying degrees of nutrition training, most not to the extent that a dietitian will. And so that may be worth it if it's in your budget. Yep.
That's such a good point. Okay. And we should link that blog post in the show notes too. We'll have that.
Yes, we will. We'll link the blog post and we'll link the site that you just shared with us too, so that those resources will be there for you. Okay, so this is iron, right? All of this conversation that was iron. Mm-hmm. So in sort of a conventional prenatal, what are some of the other kind of glaring issues that women should be aware of when they're making a choice? I don't want to say issues. What are some of the important things that women want to make sure they're looking for or avoid?
So another really key nutrient that I touched on really briefly, but is so critical to look for. And this is going to be a big differentiator between prenatals. So if you're looking and you see a sea of prenatals on the shelf or options to get, take a look for this nutrient, choline. So choline is just so under talked about, but so important. I think we're going to see in future years here, this be like this superstar nutrient that we really put more effort or we really educate more on. But we do know that 90 to 95% of women aren't even meeting the adequate intake level for choline before conceiving. Wow. And I mentioned choline plays a critical role in that neural tube development, the healthy development of neural tube. It also just plays a big role in methylation, which is a cellular process that really goes into overdrive as soon as conception occurs, because it's so important for cell differentiation and embryo development and growth and implantation, and pregnancy as a whole is very methylation demanding, so to speak. Choline is needed for that. And choline is, as I said, most people are not getting enough in their diet. It's really primarily found in animal foods. We can get it in egg yolks, eggs, liver, organ meats in the more concentrated amounts. And so choline, though, the problem with it in prenatals is it's a very large nutrient. It's a large nutrient and it's relatively expensive too. And so this is one of the first things that's cut, because everybody really wants, and I don't fault anyone for this. Everyone really wants the one a day, the gummies, the easy to take, like one and done, you know, and feel like you're good. But the problem is, some of the most important nutrients that we need in supplemental forms, in addition to diet, are really big. And that's what drives up capsules. So I think a big red flag will be if your prenatal is a one a day, or it's a gummy. I can almost guarantee that it's not going to have enough choline to really support you, and you'll need to go find an additional choline supplement at a minimum.
So you end up taking more pills.
Yes, exactly. So it's like, do you want it all in one bottle, you know, one comprehensive formula in one bottle and make it easy? Or do you want to pair together like, you know, four or five different things? So that's a choice, of course. I would also just say, you know, some of those other really large nutrients that are really important are magnesium and calcium. So they take up a lot of room in the capsule, a lot of space. That's what drives up, you know, the serving size. And so those are others that I would really look at. And when it comes to magnesium, the form is so critical. I know you guys will probably agree, right? I mean, different forms of magnesium are used for different things. And you can easily, the cheapest form of magnesium has a pretty potent laxative effect. So that's magnesium oxide. Mm-hmm. Magnesium citrate, I even really think of that more for, you know, more constipation and its laxative effect. But magnesium glycinate, that's fantastic for bioavailability, which means your body can absorb and utilize it easily. It's got a little extra glycine, which we need more of in pregnancy, and easy to tolerate.
That's awesome. That's such a good point about the size.
Yeah.
Yes. And that. Just for comparison's sake, I know how many capsules a serving size is for your prenatal. So share with people and just give like a brief, like, this is why.
Yeah. So this will, for those that don't know full well, I mean, this will blow your mind. Hopefully people won't tune out, but it's 8 capsules, you know, per serving, which I know it sounds crazy. And honestly, when I was formulating it, I started with the exact formula I wanted, basically, right? You know, this is what I want in it. Mm-hmm. This is what I feel like we need in addition to diet in these forms. What does it end up being? Right. And it was, yes, it was 8 capsules, you know, and I was told by everybody, there is no way anybody's going to take this, reduce it, get rid of these big nutrients. And, you know, even if you reduce some of the nutrients, it makes no difference. It's really the big critical ones that you need in those amounts, that you'd have to sacrifice in order to reduce the capsule size. So that's why it's an 8 a day. I will say most people say, and most of my practice clients, I took it myself, you know, 4 with breakfast and 4 with lunch. It's actually not too big of a deal at the end of the day. And it's nice knowing that it's all there in one. But yeah, it's really that we have 300 milligrams of choline. That is way more than you see in most prenatals. And 300 milligrams is really, I think, the minimum for supplementation, because we know that the, during pregnancy, you need a minimum of 450 milligrams, 550 in lactation, and newer research is showing that's actually probably should be edited to be closer to 1,000, you know, milligrams a day. So we've got, and we already know with the basics, right? We are 90-95% of women aren't even meeting the minimum. So I think the more choline supplementally, in some ways, the better. You know, it's a tough one to overdo, but it's usually not in a prenatal at all, or in very small amounts.
Wow. Okay. Huge gem there.
Yeah. I also think that just speaks to how far most women are from the intake that they actually need. The fact that you're eating, even if you're not a vegetarian and you are eating some of these animal foods that have choline in it, you still need 8 pills a day to help you get to the minimum. Oh boy. Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, I know in my practice, you know, I would see a lot of women that did a good job with their diet, you know, and they're like, I don't understand what the problem is, right? And we'd run nutrient testing, you know, and lots of deficiencies, lots of inadequate levels, suboptimal levels. And I really do think that even with really solid diets, we aren't eating like we historically were. So there's that piece, nose to tail, you know, and really organ meats and things like that with any regularity. So there's that piece. Some are just, you know, where there's many clients that I've had in practice, right? They're vegetarian, vegan, and excluding those altogether. And then again, we've got all these like modern stressors in our environment, in our lives that really stress creates the need for a lot more nutrients, you know, overall.
Oh,
right.
I think that's just so, that's something that I personally have been more fascinated with over the past couple of years, just the research on how much stress just like sucks the nutrients up, basically. You just need so much more. So anyway, thank you. Is there anything else about prenatals that you think are kind of like a glaring red flag?
Yeah, I think folate's a good one to talk about as well, you know, just briefly. And oh gosh, this has been surprisingly controversial. I've gotten into some really heated debates with you know, doctors and other practitioners and things like that. And it's interesting to me.
Over Foley.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I, there was a night.
Team Ayla. There was Team Ayla.
I mean, I was literally up all night with one Foley, total Foley debacle a few months ago. It was crazy. I was like, do I need a PR team to help me like defend my stance on Foley? This is ridiculous. So I had to like come back in and be like,
here we are.
Like, there are bigger problems in the world.
You got us.
All right. Thanks.
but we got you.
But I mean, here's the thing that blows my mind, you know, I mean, over 80% of the folate that we find naturally in food is methylfolate. There's another percentage, you know, chunk of that remaining that's calcium folinate or folinic acid. We use those two forms in my prenatal, and that's what I tend to I recommend using or looking for in any prenatal. So methylfolate and or folinic acid, calcium folinate. So you want a combination or just methylfolate. That's a highly bioavailable form of folate that your body can readily absorb and use. Now, folic acid, as we talked about earlier, that was introduced to the food supply in the late 90s. As a really, really inexpensive form of folate to add to food to help reduce neural tube defects and help supplement the diet of women. But the thing about folic acid is it's actually, and you'll see this in the research, it's absorbed really well in the intestines, but our body can't utilize it as well. So absorption doesn't always mean utilization, you know? And so that's the case with folate. And I think it may be part of the root of the debate is that a lot of the studies show that it's absorbed very well, and we may see it show up in the serum, so blood tests, but it doesn't mean that it's actually being utilized. And so the problem with that is there's byproducts of what's called unmetabolized folic acid. And this is getting kind of into like, I go down real deep with folate, but so I don't want to bore everybody, but you know, there's consequences to unmetabolized folic acid. And so we don't want that, right? And I think, again, some of the controversy too is that a lot of the research, there's been a ton of funding around folic acid versus folate, typical and nutrition resource. I mean, that's research. I mean, that's a synthetic nutrient, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Synthetic's not always a bad thing, but it's something that's easy to study, and they had a reason to study it because they were fortifying the food supply. So it was a big public health initiative, and there was funding for that. But at the end of the day, we have just as good data to show that methylfolate is much more bioavailable. So end point there is that's what you want to look for.
So wow. End point is that you want to look on the label, make sure that there's no iron, ideally. Get your iron tested and supplement as needed. You want to make sure that there is choline or supplement separately. You're saying a minimum of 300 milligrams. And then look for the form of folate that you're seeing on that label. If it doesn't say methylfolate, choose something that does, because you're not going to be really getting that benefit.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. People will look at a label and they'll be like, all of the things, this is great. But without understanding, these forms don't get absorbed by the body, and why would they?
Right.
Why would a normal person understand how to read that? It's not in the job description of day-to-day human, right?
Right.
So that those three look perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. So if nothing else, you could take a look at either the one that you're taking, or if and when it is time for you, you can use those guidelines to really, really make sure that you're getting the best one. Obviously, Fullwell will be an option too. And the blog that Ayla was talking about, arm yourself for your appointment so that you feel empowered and organized. I think that would be really helpful for people. And then let's connect this circle. So all of this is about supplements. And then you mentioned there's a whole food component, which we actually have Lily Nichols on next week. Mm-hmm. So she's going to be taking that route with us.
We're doing a little pregnancy series unintentionally.
Unintended, completely unintended. We've got a pelvic floor PT after that too.
Yeah.
So, but now I'd love to hear your conversation around preconception, because you know, prenatals, and I think I didn't know this. There's at some point I learned that you should be taking a prenatal once you decide you would like to try to conceive, rather than, now that I'm pregnant, I'll start a prenatal. So let's have that conversation. Like, what is it that you know leading up to wanting to
consider? Yes, I think it's most common, right? For, you know, you get a positive pregnancy test and you think, prenatal multivitamin, I better go to the store, grab one. And probably your OB, if you were to connect with them, would just say, yeah, go grab whatever off the shelf. That's the most common recommendation without really a lot of discernment, right? But really, as we talked a little bit about in the beginning, the nutrients that are needed in the early, early stages, like before you even know you're pregnant and a little bit beyond that, are so important. I think we assume that the bulk of the additional nutrient needs aren't needed until later in pregnancy. I mean, babies small early, right? It's not until they're bigger. And I think there's just some of that that feels a little misleading. And the reality is that we need to go into pregnancy with good nutrient status. Now, I think of the preconception period, and I would call that like 3 to 6+ months before pregnancy. I mean, 3 months is when things start getting really real, you know, but I would say if you think that having a baby is at all in the realm of a possibility over the next year, maybe even two, then there is no better time to start to look at your nutrition and lifestyle choices, because everything that you do, even that the very early development of the egg that you'll ultimately ovulate and hopefully conceive with starts up to a year, you know, before you know, you get pregnant. And it really kind of that development really goes into overdrive in that 3 months, you know, before conceiving. And we've got to nourish, you know, we've got to nourish the environment that it's growing in, developing in. That nourishment helps provide good hormone balance in a number of different ways, which is critical to both egg quality and sperm quality. We've got to make sure that by nourishing and providing enough, what I call just like resources for the proper development and health of both egg and sperm in that 3-6+ month window, we're also helping to reduce the risk of chromosomal errors. So chromosomal errors are really the biggest reason for pregnancy loss, the biggest reason for complications that can arise in pregnancy. And so while that's not all in our control, there's things that go back generations, things that happen that we won't ever be able to control. What we can do is really focus on that nourishment and flooding the body with the right stuff, because that will help reduce the risk. And just to kind of sum that up, you know, there's something called epigenetic imprinting that happens, you know, preconception and in early and throughout pregnancy, actually, where what you're doing, what you're eating, how you're nourishing, what's happening in your environment really is talking to the developing embryo. The egg, the sperm talk to, you know, ultimately send signals that affect how the embryo and also the placenta, which is what nourishes baby through a pregnancy, develops. So it's so important because what really that means is that everything that we do in that preconception period, both women and men to a much larger degree than we've ever given them credit for, or really educated on, influences the health of future generations. So it like blows my mind, you know, because it's really the ultimate preventative medicine. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. So many things. Expand a little bit on what you were mentioning about the quality and the health of sperm and men's role in this, because the conversation is very much, what should the woman be doing? What should she be eating? What should the supplements be? What should she not be doing? Mm-hmm. Right? A whole different conversation. And I think this really is a nuanced component to that chat. So what?
Really culturally, we think of fertility and infertility specifically as a women's health issue. And in reality, it's not. It's equally both. So about 30% of fertility issues are a result of female factors, 30% male factors, and then the remaining 40% are a combination of both. So it's really equally both partners that contribute to fertility challenges, even though, and when I started my practice and really got into fertility, it was like just women, you know, and it always started with just women coming to see me, and I would kind of drag the partner in, you know, as well. And then I ultimately wound up requiring that. It's men's role can't be understated. So the health of men preconception will, we know in the research, it is tied to the risk of pregnancy loss, preeclampsia, preterm birth. There's even some research around it's tied to gestational diabetes. One thing that I find so fascinating that I kind of want to like shout from the rooftops is that there was some recent research that showed that male factors contribute more to the development and the health of the placenta than female factors, which is crazy. And a lot of these pregnancy complications actually relate back to the health of the placenta, an organ that women grow during pregnancy to help nourish baby and also do a lot of other really amazing things.
That seems counterintuitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How is that possible? So the health of the man and then ultimately the sperm has more of an impact on the health of an organ that the woman grows than her own health.
It does, because, you know, sperm have have a much bigger role. Sperm and actually semen as a whole has a bigger role than just fertilization. I mean, there is so much signaling and, you know, DNA and epigenetic imprinting and things that are happening that it's really cool, you know, when you really get into it. And so, and it's in both cervical fluid and semen, you know, you find nutrients, you really do, you know, so, that's also kind of points to how nutrition really plays into all of this.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to have that's going to live in my head forever.
It lives in mine. I talk about it all the time to whoever will listen.
Oh my God. The thing that's sticking with me is this idea of this type of conversation really having a huge impact on future generations. Like this is our legacy that we as humans in this world this time around get to leave. And to think that, I mean, when it's all said and done, it's doesn't have to be tremendous tweaks.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't have to be these like life-changing, life-altering, you know, sorts of things. But actually, aside from supplementation, what are some of the things that both men and women should be thinking about in this kind of precious 3 to 6 plus month period?
Yeah, I'm so glad that you made that point, Kylie, because it really is important, because you hear all this and it's like, oh my gosh, the pressure, you know, the weight of it.
That's what
and
I was
thinking. And it just feels very overwhelming. And that's the thing, you know, with fertility, it can be, because it's like, what doesn't impact, right? You know, and there's only so much we can control. So I like to think of it more simply and, you know, in that we want to reduce the straws on the camel's back, right? Really, when it comes to fertility, our body by design is always going to prioritize everything else over reproductive health and fertility. So my approach has always been to, okay, how can we make sure that there's enough resources to go around by flooding the body with the right stuff? And where can we maybe take some of the straws off the camel's back so that resources aren't being shuttled away, you know, to other needs in the body? And that looks a little different for everybody, but really it comes down to, I think, one, really antioxidants and nutrients. So nutrient density in the diet, I think flooding the body with those kinds of things. So think fruits, vegetables. You know, this isn't a stage of life where I would recommend, and Lily will go into this in great detail with you guys in such a great way. Her, you know, really in her book too, she talks about this, but you know, just how important the nutrients that we get from animal foods really are during this stage of life. And it's very difficult to compensate even supplementally, you know, with supplements without that. So I think, you know, this isn't a time for restriction. This is a time to add more of the right stuff. So versus taking away when it comes to nutrition. And then lifestyle, I think, you know, I always kind of run through, if it's a client in my practice, I look at, okay, what are the biggest bang for your buck type things that we can do? Is there, so we know that there's a lot of a lot of chemicals in our environment, right? A lot of chemicals that interfere with hormones and signaling and create more pressure on our detoxification systems to deal with and things like that. So I like to look and see, okay, what are the things that you're doing like every day? What are those? Is there a lotion that you religiously apply day and night, you know? And can we just yes. look at the ingredients and have a conversation about that, you know? And maybe we can swap that. So I think it doesn't have to be, okay, every single pot and pan and beauty product and self-care item needs to go out the window. It's more like, look at the big, big ones, because that's probably where the majority of the issue is coming from, and make some easy swaps. So I'd say that would be another area that both women and men could focus on.
That's great.
I have two questions. The first one is, I ask this to every opportunity I can. I ask it to our guests, because I just think there's so much confusion around the term of, or like, diet quality, nutrient density. I know you mentioned fruits and vegetables, yeah. but I think we've all experienced the client who comes mm-hmm. in to see us and is like, I eat fruits and vegetables, but then when we actually get to do their 24-hour recall or their diet journal, it's like, okay, eating fruits and this is not to shame anybody. It's just, how would you know? Like, you wouldn't know if you weren't told. But it's like, what is the standard in your mind to get a nutrient dense
diet? Yeah, what does that look like? That's a good question, yeah. because I recently, this is a good reminder, because I was recently talking to someone where I was throwing around the term nutrient density, and they're like, what do you mean by that? Like, that just, you know, I really don't understand you, Mayla, you know? What I think of, and the way that I kind of approach it simply, is if we think of a plate, and you guys can tell me your take on this too, I'd be curious, but a fertility supporting plate would look like half of that plate, like, which equates in my mind to, for most people, like 2 full cups of vegetables, you know, like your non-starchy vegetables. Then there's an animal protein on there, a carbohydrate source, maybe your starchy vegetables, which are going to be a little more nutrient dense than like a white rice, but you can kind of, when we use that term nutrient density, it's like how many vitamins and minerals and nourishment are there per gram compared to the same amount as another food, right? So yeah, heavy on the fruits and vegetables, but inclusive of an animal protein, fats, and some type of carbohydrate. So it's not a time to be omitting entire food groups. It's not a time to be really, really trying to lose a lot of weight, which is funny how I really got started in fertility was I was getting referred clients from a local IVF clinic who were being told, lose weight as fast as you can or we'll cancel your cycles. and so that's how it really started. And I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. You know, like the stress alone that these poor women are under this is not how you want to go into pregnancy. So, and I stand by that. I think, you know, even if you're not an optimal body weight, right before conceiving is not the time to really be trying to aggressively lose weight. Yeah. Right.
That makes sense.
Take that one, guys. Yeah. Take that.
Listen, let that one sink in.
You're right. The stress of weight loss and weight management, it's a mm-hmm. stressor.
Yeah.
Even if you're motivated and feeling good and getting results or whatever, wherever you might be, that's really, I think, a different angle than most people probably yep. hear.
Yeah. I had one more question too that I was thinking when you went into talking about the toxins and the chemicals, and I love your approach as far as picking like the big things. So for listeners who are listening and they hear that and they're like, oh, I do use this lotion every day, or I do use this sunscreen. How can they know mm-hmm. if that item is not great? Like, what tools do you use in your practice
yeah.
to help your clients assess that?
Yeah. So I would say when it comes to personal care products, and this is usually a big source of additional exposures to things that can be disruptive that we have some control over. Some of the others are like pesticides and pollution. And I mean, that's more difficult. I also would put plastics into the mix and just say as a quick tip, like don't heat your plastic where you're consuming things out mm-hmm. of. Like that would be mm-hmm. big bang for your buck type thing. But for personal care products like your lotions and shampoos and things like that, I think EWG, Environmental Working Group, they have their Skin Deep mm-hmm. app. I know that there's some controversy around it. There always is when these organizations get big, but right. I still think they're a really good resource. They do some good research. There's some newer, and I'm trying to remember, there's some browser. There's an interesting like browser extension, I think, for Google now. And I cannot remember the name.
Of course.
Yeah. And it's kind of great. Right. But it definitely, it helps. It helps with that too. And I think there's new sites popping up and clean beauty options. There's also a lot of greenwashing. You know, I think a brand that drives me nuts, you know, and I'll just say it so you guys, you know, you don't have to say any brands, but, you know, Mrs. Meyers, you know, and their products. There's, it's so prevalent. I mean, you see them at health food stores and they just are full of synthetic fragrance. And synthetic fragrance tends to be a potent source of phthalates, which is a known hormone endocrine disruptor. And so I would be just be cautious of that, especially if you're going out to buy, you know, your pumpkin spice candles and things like that. I don't know when this is going to air, but that's like, you know, fall.
No, that's perfect. Yeah, you know, yes, he nailed it.
Yep. So I think
that's such a good point.
Yeah. So just those type of, right. But that's, you know, that's one that always,
but not really,
is so common in households, right? Yep.
Yeah.
I have one last question about another nutrient in preconception and then pregnancy breastfeeding. What about fish oils? So I know that's another product that you kind of marry with your prenatal. So tell us a little
bit. Yeah. So omega-3 fatty acids are essential fatty acids. And they're really, really important for fertility, pregnancy, breastfeeding, really that whole perinatal period. And that's another one that you don't want mixed into a prenatal. So I have seen a lot of newer formulas where they're adding, you know, DHA to the formula. And you can't really, there's not a really easy way to add EPA, which is another type of essential fatty acid. So the two that you're going to see are called DHA and EPA. Those are two types of omega-3 fatty acids. They are throwing DHA into a lot of prenatals because there's some more stable forms of DHA available. However, I still have concerns through the R&D that we did, or I did, to try to get my products to launch and feel good about them with the stability of having any essential fatty acids mixed into vitamins and minerals. It doesn't mean you can't take fatty acids with your multivitamin. I just don't think as it's sitting in the bottle on the shelf together that we are really that confident that it's going to remain not oxidized, which is a big problem, or still potent, right? So, the other issue
that makes me think of like nuts, like, you know how they'll go rancid after a while. It's because it's those, for those of you listening, I think what you're saying is it's because it's some of those same fats. They are not stable in long term.
That's right. The more those fats are processed and exposed to heat, light, air is a big one. The more likely they are to break down, and it's probably worse, arguably, to take an oxidized oil, especially a fish oil, than it is not to take one. And so one of the big things, and so just to the other point here, is that you won't see EPA mixed in, and this isn't talked about. I think DHA is like driven home as being the important one. And it's true. It's the type of omega-3 fatty acid that does all the things. It has, in the research, really validates that it's having a lot of the benefit for baby's brain development, mom's mood. It's really important. But EPA is needed to help DHA cross the placenta and make it to baby. So we really need EPA too to help with that. And that's why, and you never, by the way, will see DHA alone in nature. I mean, it always comes together with EPA, and the natural source for that is fish. And so when I set out to make our fish oil, I was really concerned about sustainability, definitely how it was being processed and how we were going to measure oxidation, what we just talked about, in the final product to ensure that it was as fresh as possible. It was meeting the label claims. It had DHA and EPA, and it was sustainable, which is a big problem in the seafood industry, fish oil world right now. But there are options out there, like algae-based options, that are getting better, but I'm just not sure they're there yet. And I think there's a lot of processing that has to happen with those to get them where they are. So ultimately, I landed on fish oil. I think for listeners, what you really want to see, based on my literature reviews and developing this product, is you want to see 400 plus milligrams of DHA really sometimes you want to go as high as doubling that or even tripling it. It really depends on your omega-3 fatty acid intake and your needs. So sometimes you need to go much higher. Mm. And then some EPA. So I think a roughly like 2-to-1 ratio is good. So, you know, 400 milligrams DHA, 200 milligrams of EPA is a nice place to start. And some people, again, if you eat no seafood at all, you might need to double that.
You know, this just spawned a question. You said double or triple that. What if somebody is pregnant with multiples? Does this change? Like, are they taking 16 capsules? I assume not, but I know the needs go up. Are we depending on our food from that? Because naturally you'll be hungry.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So the prenatal, so omega-3s, I would say a practice in my client, I would definitely double. For the prenatal, I think it covers multiple pregnancies as well, with the big asterisk, okay, like talk to your practitioner, you know, about your needs, but macronutrient needs, you know, additional protein, calories, carbohydrates, fats, that will all go up. So I think that the prenatal meets the micro. Now, most prenatals wouldn't meet micronutrient needs of multiple pregnant, you know, multiples, but that's I do think that, full well does, based on my assessment of the research. Yeah.
And then tell us about Fullwell. Yeah. We've mentioned it a million times now. Where can people find out more information? Because I know a huge piece of what Fullwell really stands behind is the education, mm-hmm, behind a lot of, you know, not only pregnancy, but women health, mm-hmm, women's health in general. Which is why it's such a great fit for you to come and chat with us today.
Yeah.
So tell us where people can find more about both the supplement line and some of the educational sources that...
Yes. Well, thanks for that. So it's fullwellfertility.com is our site. And we're really going through a makeover right now, like a 3.0 version, I should say, but where we want to really highlight the education better. But if you navigate over to the knowledge well, that's where... our whole team just pours so much into these articles that we've put up there. So even if you know, the products aren't necessarily right for you and you go another direction, I think we'd love to see, you know, grab some education, things you can bring to your provider to talk about, you know, from the knowledgeable. We try to make it really easy to like grab stuff so you can talk about it with whoever you're working with, but also just, you know, it's for, you know, the person who is, wants to learn this on their own, you know, wants to be empowered with the information. Mm-hmm. And so I think that a lot of information gets very watered down because we assume that people just won't understand or they don't need to know that much, but we don't do that. I really try to just give you downloads of our brains of what we're doing in practice between myself and the other dietitians on the team. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Incredible. And Ayla, are you either personally or is your team taking clients?
Right now, I'm not. My practice is Boston Functional Nutrition, and we have hit pause a little bit on taking new clients because of just how crazy life has gotten. But if there's any really, really savvy listeners or health practitioners listening, I do with Lily, who I think you said is coming on your next episode. Yeah. Her and I co-founded the Women's Health Nutrition Academy, and that's also another place, wow, that you can find us. And we're ramping back up with those webinars now, so we're excited to get more of, okay, those out. Yep.
And where yeah, so is that just what is the website
that's
for that?
WHNacademy.com. And Lily has an awesome webinar coming up on pregnancy weight gain, and she as she does best is really challenging, you know, the current guidelines and what are they really evidence based and what does that look like and how do you think about it. Mm-hmm.
Amazing. So yeah, we'll have all of that in the show notes. And is there anything else that you would like to point our listeners to or anything else that you want to say to make sure you have unloaded your full heart into this episode?
No, I mean, I think, you know, we're over on Instagram @fullwellfertility, I should say. So that's another place that you can find us. And yeah, we're just happy to have people part of our community again, whether or not you're sure that, even if you're not sure you want to have kids. I mean, a lot of this information, fertility it can be used as a real window into your overall health. When something's off with your fertility and reproductive health, it's usually indicative of some sort of imbalance elsewhere. And so I think for everyone, no matter what, even if you're not thinking kids, it's wise to be looking at your reproductive health, getting some of this information and focusing on it. So I think it could be helpful for everybody.
Yeah.
Oh, thank that you really so rounds much. It out, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does.
Meg, I could do this for 2 more hours.
I know.
I wasn't watching the time and like, wrap it up.
I know.
Ayla, you thought we'd have to pull the hook on you, God.
Yeah, you have to pull the hook on us. She's going to be like, guys, I got to go. It's been 5 hours. Goodbye.
I probably would have noticed. I love
it. It's no longer fun.
Thank you for having me on. Well,
Ayla.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to Curious Women. If you love our show, you can support us by leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And if you know someone else who would really love our show, please share it with them too.